Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Don't worry about it, because I've hit the button. I need to tell you about a game called The Longing, Jules Gill. Also, I'm Scott Tilford. This is the Untitled Banter podcast. I don't even know what introduction was.
Wait. So usually we ramble for about 20 minutes and then you say, I press the record button. Yeah. And this time around, you've hit me with it and just gone like, boom, I need to tell you about a game. Just, but also, you know, we're doing the podcast.
You've got to mix it up every now and then.
It's, you know what, Scott? I've got a longing to understand what this game is about. Come on, tell me.
So this was part of the Nintendo Indie Showcase. It's been out for a couple of years on PC and stuff, but it's a game that literally takes 400 days to beat. Apparently there are ways to reduce the counter. But you're playing as a little dude called a Shade who gets made by a king. And then he's like, I'm going to go to sleep. Can you wake me up in 400 days? And so like he's then asleep in the middle of the room. And the game is like a mix of like Animal Crossing and I don't even know. Basically, you just do little bits every day and it's 400 days of real world time to get through. But you can sit in his bedroom, you can read books, Moby Dick's in there, you can read it in full.
So when does the game start?
Well, that is the game, isn't it?
You're falling into my trap card. I've activated my trap card, Yugi, my boy, because
go on.
That's not a game. That's you and I have come to blows about the merits and cons of
just
Animal
a dust
Crossing.
Cloud with limbs coming out of it.
I'm very much a person that doesn't enjoy wasting my time on like games. And if that is your cup of tea, right? If you like going into like Animal Crossing and picking up 50 bugs and then going in to move a sofa, like the amount of people that got so incredibly like elated by the fact that you could now lay pavements in the newest one. I was like, how is that a big feature?
But I'm not going to lie. I bounced the hell off Animal Crossing New Horizons because there's a whole article on the site why it's the loneliest game ever, because you're just talking to a bunch of robotic animals that'll just feed you like vague friendship statements. And I was like, this actually just makes me feel more alone, to be honest.
It's platitudes, it's not the game. Basically just like meaningless buzzwords to be like, you feel better now.
Yeah, I get that totally works for people. And to be honest, it did work a bit for me last year, but in terms of The Longing, that game is literally locked down the game. Like, you are, how do you want to spend your 400 days? I spent 2 hours last night, Jules Gill, walking up a staircase, because he walks really slowly as well. He walks really slowly.
You're causing my blood to boil, man. You spent two real world hours climbing stairs.
It was like, you just went to what I did at the top of those stairs. What are you going to say?
Oh, you tell me. Did you dust the cupboard?
You're actually quite close. I got to the top of the stairs because I used it as a podcast game. So I was like, well, and you can tell him to auto walk if you want. So you don't have to play it if you don't want to. Just tell him
it removes the one bit of agency that you do have.
So I walked up the stairs, took me a couple hours, and I got through all my podcasts. It was lovely. And then I got to the top of the stairs and there was a little spider hanging out. And and the shade man was like, oh, I found a friend. There's actually something else living in here. And then the spider needs to make another web to go somewhere else. And then the game tells me that that's going to take days. So I need to wait days in the same place before I go back to see
actual
what the
days, right? Like this isn't like in-game days.
Oh, doors take hours. So when you try to open a door, it's like, oh, this is going to take 2 hours. You're going to need to come back. So I set a little alarm last night and I came back in 2 hours just to open a door. That's what we're doing. That's what we're dealing with. Right, I sound very ill right now and I am physically ill, but I think I'm also head ill.
What you've described there is like the worst mobile freemium titles that you're happy about. Like,
I'm fascinated.
I don't get you,
it.
Mate. I don't what? Get you.
What happens at the end of the 400 days though? Because there's multiple endings, and I've picked up some coal. And
multiple
some
endings that you're gonna have to play through multiple times. You're gonna sit there and be like, oh, that ending was good. Better wager another 400 days of your life.
But I just want to know.
Mate, how can... Right, okay. I get what you're saying is that it it takes 400 days, but it's actually more like you're only playing it for like, what, two hours, three hours
as long
time,
as you go, because
right?
You
like
can
dip in, dip out. Sort of.
Yeah, you can finish it if you start it at the very beginning, you get made, and then if you literally just turn the game off, your dude will just sleep for 400 days. You could come back in 400 days and get an ending.
Right, okay.
So that's one thing. That side of it fascinates me, because we've never had a game be done like this. I'm just kind of like, this is
the closest that we came to, though, was maybe the Stanley Parable with that one achievement that was like, don't play the game for 5 years or whatever it was.
Yeah, but, which I didn't do.
But that was a gimmick.
Yeah, by now, I guess. Yeah.
But what I was about to say, you have done it by not doing it.
We've all got that achievement.
Is this going on a list of games that you can complete by doing literally nothing? Because if not, this is a wasted opportunity.
Yes, it should, because we've not thought of doing that. I don't know.
Making content while we're making content. Welcome to the UBP, everyone.
We put content in the content so we can content while we content. Also, this is the Untitled Banter podcast. I'm Scott Tailford, joined by Jules Gill.
Wait, is this a second round robin intro?
I just
intro?
Need to remind because... them.
Yeah, because they probably tuned off by now. Hello, everyone. UBP, hello. UBP, UBP, UBP.
Now, we did ask for a usual round of questions. Thanks, everybody, so much for sending their stuff in. I am going to go through questions a little bit faster. One, because we had a bit of a blab about The Longing, but I needed to tell someone about The Longing. Otherwise, it's just me in a room by
myself. I'll go to my the perennial egg, Jules Gill. He'll be the tough person because he's not constantly trying to make use of what little time he has to play video games in the first place. I'm going to tell him about 400...
I was sitting there at like hour one, halfway up the stairs, and the character says, "These are some long stairs." I'm like, "Yeah, they are a bit." But like, I'm what's at the top? Eh?
It puts the ladder of Metal Gear Solid to shame.
It's literally that the game. It's literally that. But what's at the top? I don't know. You don't know. Let's find out in 400 days. Anyway,
when people say like something's a turn off. That description of this is like, it's made it go inside me. That's how much I'm turned off by this.
Like an alligator's peen.
Yeah, it's like a lipstick.
First a question from Caleb J. Ross, who just says, cutscenes, yes or no, sometimes is not allowed. I'm going to say yes. I don't know why absolute maniac is skipping cutscenes.
Yes, with a caveat that they should all come with a skip cutscene button.
They should, but I also hate when a game suggests that you skip it. Like when in the corner it just says skip. Like, you know, in some games it's skip.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm
just
sort of like, what, the entire art department's just crying in the corner because like, oh, you've suggested.
It's a bit harsh, isn't it?
Just bin the whole story off. Yeah, definitely yes, though. Question from James/Jamie. If you had to fight through a horde of zombies a la Army of the Dead, what would be your video game weapon of choice? Thanks and hope you're both doing well. Listening to us, the two of us, is a highlight of their week. I would say, thank you very much. I would say the big old paddle thing with the chainsaw.
From Dead Rising 2.
From Dead Rising, yeah.
Yes, yes. I was about to say that Dead Rising literally has the best weapons for any sort of like zombie horde culling that you need to do. Mm-hmm. I personally would go for the, I think it's called the Raging Thunder or the Roaring Thunder. Okay. It's the blanker mask with the battery pack so that you just basically scream it. Yeah, I think it's from 3. It might be from 2, actually. Right. It might be 2 off the record. Mm-hmm. And it's like there's like a huge wave of lightning attack around. It's just like...
that was like hilarious. But... Ever since the other week when we did a chatty face and Ben Roy referred to the zombie attitude era, the mid-2000s as the zombie attitude era, when everything was zombies. And he's so right, because it was like the Dead Rising is the epitome of the zombie attitude era. And I can't not think of it in that way now, where I'm just sort of like, that was such a time. Like just like big explosive face mask and everything.
It might well be one of my favorite franchises. I really don't like Dead Rising 4. Wasn't, I think it's the worst one. And I think that Dead Rising 3 kind of lost a lot of its charm. But Dead Rising 1 and especially 2, especially off the record, they really were a good laugh.
Opens on a chainsaw mounted bike.
It does. That'll
be
quite part of the zombie reality TV show.
Yes. Definitely go back to 2. I still haven't played 3, but at some point I'll plug the gap. Next question from Brian Jackson. With Resident Evil Village coming up, I'm curious what style of Resident Evil you prefer. Personally thought Resident Evil Biohazard was excellent and can't wait for Village. Resident Evil Biohazard?
Well, Resident Biohazard is obviously the Japanese name. Yeah, so amazing. I'm assuming that they are referencing to fixed camera angle versus first person.
Which also leaves out the RE4, RE2, 3 remake type stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I actually personally prefer the over-the-shoulder stuff. I think that Resident Evil 2's remake really did perfect that sort of the fluidity of movement between like getting your gun up and moving around and still having enough... of a visual spectrum that you can see enemies coming from the sides, but enough so that it blocks off so you feel a little bit powerless and helpless. I think
did you see a very good job with that. The announcement of Resident Evil 4 VR last night?
No, I missed this. There's a VR version.
They're doing a VR version. It's only on the Oculus Quest 2 or something, but they're doing a VR version of Resident Evil 4.
I reckon that'll be spectacular fun.
It probably will be. I'm not a big VR's man. I sort of am, and I'm, if it's No Man's Sky, I'm there on day one. But if it's anything else, you know, if it was The Longing in VR.
Climbing up those stairs. I've just thought, that how scary would it be when you come across the regeneradors?
Yeah.
You know, the ones that like do the...
I was going to say you would hear it if it's like around the corner.
Horrible.
I think in terms of the two stars of Resident Evil, and he's left out the sort of over-shoulder one. If I'm picking between fixed camera perspective and first person, I think I'd probably go fixed camera out of those two, because
I do enjoy a fixed camera. That,
As like a
maybe it's because of the fact that it's a nostalgia thing where we remember how beautifully detailed at the time the locations were, because it was like that allowed them to put in so much more graphical fidelity into the backdrops, and that in turn created a very cool atmosphere.
I was going to say, I think it gives it an insane sense of place that you just, the medium reminded me of it, like a big zoomed out, you know, that style.
You've got to think as well about direction. When you when you choose to have a fixed camera perspective, the director of the scene is allowed to create that perfect feeling. Like it is showing you exactly what it wants to show you. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how many times that I've missed an important set piece in a first person game where I've just run around a corner, maybe not looked where the game wanted me to, and completely missed like a giant whale jumping out of the sea. And I'd be like, I was looking at this like a gas canister. Hey.
That's so weird that I was thinking of this the other day. The bit in Bioshock Infinite when you go back to Rapture and Song is out the window. Totally missed that.
You told me.
Looking around Rapture.
Like a little cat trying to come in, just kind of like, I'm dead now. I'm dead. See you later, mate.
I span around and saw it sort of fade away from the window, but I was like, has that been there the whole time? I just sort of, all right then, I think sometimes the first person stuff, it's weird because I think they're doing it really well. All the newest stuff they showed last night for RE8 looks really solid. But I don't know, signature style. At some point I want them to go back and do another isometric, the medium style one.
I wouldn't be surprised if they did actually return to that, if we get another handheld console that is like pretty powerful. Maybe like, I feel like a little retro throwback on a smaller console probably would be quite fitting.
I kind of thought they might do something this, because it's the 25th anniversary. It was in February, I think, or maybe it was March, but it's this year. I thought they might do something as like a throwback to that, but like, because last night it was like, we got one more announcement, and then it's just more of what we already know is coming.
I kind of thought
they would throw some fun little thing in. Next question from Edward Shiraz Hans. Great name.
Ooh, very nice.
What is a game that you consistently think is undervalued, and why is it always Xenoblade Chronicles?
So Xenoblade Chronicles is one of those games where everyone who I've ever met has really, really enjoyed it. Mm. And they've always had with that little caveat of just kind of like,
It's not like outward, it's not 5-star recommendable. Like I've got Chronicles 2, but I've
played the original. 6 out of 10 game, isn't it?
Maybe like a 7. Maybe just...
It falls into that category that we were discussing a few episodes ago where like you will staunchly defend and say you had a great time, and anyone who's played it will say that, but it's just, there's just something about it that stops it from being perfect. I totally consider it to be an underrated game though, for sure.
Consistently undervalued. I don't know why, but my mind went to XCOM, even though XCOM is like a go-to thing.
I can agree with you, because it does get, I personally feel that it's always in the conversation of games, but no one ever really gives it the time of day. It's got
I feel like turn-based combat's just gone now.
Yeah, it's got its notoriety as being like, it's a hard game, it's a crushing game, it's a game that will do this, and it's also a game that has one of the best expansion packs ever made in War of the Chosen, but it doesn't ever seem to be at the forefront of everyone's mind. Like, you'll have people that are XCOM fans, but you won't have people like staunchly defending it like you will like Bioshock or something like that.
Like, how big is our office and only me and you play XCOM? Like, I've not come across anyone else who's brought it up. I mean, maybe they do, maybe they're secret XCOM fans, but like, it just doesn't seem to be in the conversation as much as like you would assume people have played Bioshock or whatever.
I'll tell you what, my underrated video game is a way pull from the PlayStation 1 era. Speed Freaks. Everyone always talks about Crash Team Racing, Diddy Kong Racing, obviously Mario Kart, but no one talks about Speed Freaks. It's such a good game.
It was brilliant. It was like inverted Rayman. Like if Rayman didn't have limbs. I guess they didn't have limbs either. They were like floating creatures in the little.
It was just big heads. No like elbows. No need to animate knees or anything like that. And the best part is that if you completed, I can't remember what time trial or special thing you had to do, but you got to play as one of the characters' dogs. I think the dog was called Monty. God, this is a pull. I can't.
Oh, you know when you get like crippled by nostalgia, where you just sort of go, oh, like, all the movies all at once. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, the dog in the car.
I know that people can't see this, but what's happened is, you know that scene in Ratatouille where the guy eats the tiny bit of Ratatouille and he has the flashback to when he was a kid? Like, Scott's just had that face of just like, oh, this is brilliant.
I've lived a whole life and now I'm here. I had that the other day when I saw the Ape Escape box art and I was like, oh, my childhood. I remember that many moons ago. But yeah, Speed Freaks and Crash. I mean, the Speed Freaks and Crash Team Racing were the two for me because I didn't have an N64 when I was a kid. But yeah, Speed Freaks is an absolute shout. Mod Nation Racers as well on PS3. Lovely little kart racing follow-up. So yeah, I guess it would be them. Next question from... Okay. Go on.
No, I was going to say, what was your underrated one? It was going to be Mod Nation.
My default went to XCOM, but I think it's mainly just because in terms of like conversations, I feel like it should be up there. Maybe it is up there with like the Bioshocks, the GTAs.
We're just hanging around with the wrong crowd.
Maybe. We just need to go find a bunch of top-down, twin-based, just a completely different assortment of people who know what, War of the Chosen is. But next question from Paul KSM. A up your pair of legends and same to you, friend. A long-time fan of the hashtag content. You pair are always dynamite. Thank you very much. Given the budget and your preferred development team, what game would you make? UBP, UBP, UBP. I think we've had this question before.
What genre would we like to make? And I think that I said that I wanted to make like a kind of like a Dino Crisis remake mixed with like a park management sim, but it wasn't Jurassic World thing. It was GTA, but with Jurassic Park. That's the game.
That was like a crossover question. So this is just complete blank slate, but you can assign a developer with a budget. What would you have them make? I would totally have Naughty Dog do the sci-fi IP that they've sort of been teasing for the last 30 years. They've sort of it's teased in Last of Us as well. It's the comics that Ellie is writing. Savage Starlight, I think it's called in Last of Us. But in their 30th anniversary art book, they talk about this sci-fi IP that they've sort of been sketching out for a lot of years and they've never pulled the trigger on it. And I would just love that team to do a sci-fi like a big sci-fi platform reaction, Uncharted in space type thing. Yeah, kind of like Star Wars 1313, but like a more specific, a newer IP.
That would be brilliant. And we're not allowed to carry on like an already existing IP, are we?
You got the budget and your preferred dev team.
What? I mean, I would go for, I would just like to see a sequel to Bully. Like really badly, because they teased it for a bit, didn't they? Where you were, what's the name of the main character?
Oh, it's Jimmy Hopkins.
Jimmy Hopkins. I was, you know what? I was about to call him Jimmy just for like pulling a name out of my ass. But like, yeah, Jimmy Hopkins. There were rumors that he was going to be at university and it was going to be set.
Well, there was a whole thing leaked of like, you go back to his hometown and like you move back in with his dad and it had this whole sort of, there was loads of like leaked sketches and stuff. And I think, I'm trying to think back, it's like 6 years worth of news leaks and stuff, but I'm sure that was eventually confirmed to have been in development, but Rockstar abandoned it, but there was no reason given. Because there was their agent thing as well, where they were going to do like a stealth thing. That was back in 2006 or something. But yeah, I mean,
the stealth genre.
Yeah, that's another thing, the stealth attitude era. But in terms of Rockstar, I mean, they are so relaxed right now in terms of what they're putting out. I mean, I know they'll be crunching behind the scenes, but in terms of like the amount of games we're getting, it's like a tenth of what they used to put out. Would you have Rockstar do something?
This is the thing. I wouldn't do it if it came with their crunch culture. I probably would. I don't know. I tell you what, actually. I'll scrap my answer. I'd reform Pandemic Studios. I'd get them to finish off Star Wars Battlefront 3, their original version, because it was 90% done. Uh-huh. Like, that's the worst thing about it, is that there is a game out there. There's somebody with the code somewhere that probably could just tidy up a few things and pump it out. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, boys.
Pandemic as well, the Saboteur's the thing that killed them, ironically, called the Saboteur. Yeah. But I always liked Full Spectrum Warrior. I've not gone back to it in a while, but that was like a turn-based kind of XCOM-ish, more like Valkyria Chronicles, because the camera was like with the squad, but you were like positioning them and all that kind of thing.
You didn't actually play as any of the soldiers. You were playing as a floating giant triangle, weren't you? I was like, I am the triangle.
But I thought that was cool. Like, it was, because apparently it was taken from some training software that they used in the military back then or something, and they used it to make this sort of military sim game. And it is backwards compatible on Xbox. But yeah, you're like moving units to specific flanks and then like choosing when to throw grenades in. I just thought it was really cool. Kind of like Valkyria Chronicles, but it's not anime. It's more realistic.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's next question from Matthias Grimm. Thoughts on this year's all-digital E3? Are you as hyped as previous years or less so? What are your expectations? Love you all. Be safe. Same to you.
Oh, I love you, mate. My expectations, as per every E3, are rock bottom low, just because of the fact that I like to keep my expectations low, so I'm pleasantly surprised if I walk away with anything. I feel like there's nothing worse than getting extremely hyped up for an event like this, and then going in and being like, oh, my favorite title didn't get mentioned. Oh, the remake that I thought was coming out has been cancelled, or it's been turned into a freemium mobile game or whatever. Like,
speaking of which, the Mortal Kombat movie is out next week, and I've got a tattoo planned. Anyway, carry on.
Hey!
I'm gonna see it. I rarely do I let myself get fully carried away on hype, but the Mortal Kombat movie looks utterly ridiculous. I was looking.
Is this your back tattoo from what we were talking about last week? You get your back tattoo.
Yeah, just all over my face as well. I'll just be a walking embodiment of the entire IP.
You should have like player one and player two in place of your eyebrows, and have your whole face converted into the original screen.
I'll just get Scorpion's mask tattooed on.
Yeah, have like Scorpion popping out of one nostril. Then you could maybe have Johnny Cage just like out of the corner of your eye.
Get an extra arm tattooed on, just be Goro.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, you were saying things about all digital E3. It is better to temper expectations, especially this year.
Yeah. I mean, I'm excited at the same time because having a touchstone event like this is always quite nice because it gives you an insight into what's going on in the industry. The only problem is that as Devolver Digital has pointed out many, many times in their sort of parody piss take conferences is that it is now all about the buzzwords. It is about adverts. It is about trailers that do not reflect the end game. It is about promising you content that will be playable maybe about 5 years down the line, but you can buy it right now. Yeah. And I feel like it's E3 has become more and more desperate. It's the same problem. And this is tangential, but I promise you it's going somewhere. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, like I said, I used to work for a language company. We used to go to lots and lots of big events and have to basically pitch to people there to go and buy our language product.
Okay.
But the problem is that every single year, the costs incurred by the company to go and promote at these events would go up and up and up because the shows that we'd go to would be get more and more attention. Therefore, space would therefore be worth more, like, you know, air quotes worth. Mm-hmm. And so we had to then raise the price of our stuff to recoup the losses of going to these events. And it sucks because you can see that happening in E3, and it's been going on for about like 5 to 10 years. Yeah. Just these people that are like, we can barely pay to get our game on the floor.
Yeah.
So we need to basically get you to pre-order right now because the marketing costs are now equal to, if not greater than, the development costs. And that is a weird state of affairs.
Also, it's even last night proved it with Resident Evil. Like, every individual company or franchise or whatever has their own live stream now. Like last night, Resident Evil was doing the whole world premiere style thing. game, which came from the Game Awards. And it's like, what would any publisher pay, like the ESA, the company behind E3, what would they even pay them for? Like,
yeah,
the assumption is, you know, you can be part of the E3 live stream, but if you can get a few thousand people watching your live stream anyway without spending tens of thousands of dollars or whatever, you're not going to do it. So I don't know what the hell. It's reputation alone at this point. Like, it's like, oh, you're going to be at E3, but what even is E3 anymore?
I guess the way to look at it is that if you went and say that we did our own, you and I had a game and we had our own live stream, we would get those hardcore fans that had either heard about us or were interested in the franchise to begin with. Mm-hmm. If you roll with the E3 crowd, you're basically hoping to convert more casual fans to your cause.
Yeah.
And obviously that's where the money is, like appealing to the mass market. So all E3 really boils down to is we've got a bigger platform. Like there's nothing special about it. It's just we've been around long enough to have a big viewership base.
Yeah. And it's like the last few years, they started making it more public as well. And obviously that hook isn't going to be there this year, because it's all going to be, they said it's all going to be an all access digital event or something. But I don't know if they're going to do something like what Microsoft did, where they put a bunch of demos online and you can play those things like within
that'd
that
be very smart. Like, that'd be very like that smart. Would be cool.
Or do like a bunch of like maybe timed access to something. But as it stands, I don't know. I'm very apprehensive. I think that there was a report. I don't think me and you did the news on it. It would have been last year, because last year's E3 was cancelled. But before then, there was this whole leaked report, this leaked set of emails from the ESA, sending it to some sort of potential buyers to get floor space about what they were offering as a company, what E3 could offer these people. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, they were planning Q-tainment, where they'd give you apps that you could use while you were standing in line. And it was like, manufacturing social chits that they could cash in later, and like this weird buzzword stuff of like a chit being like this social currency thing, or you want to, you know, like fear of missing out and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, this just feels like corporate as hell, like this weird manufactured for the kids kind of thing.
I hate the fact that they're trying to gamify just being alive. Like it's just, it's like wait in a queue, get a sticker, get 5 stickers and trade it in for 30 minutes of playing The Division 3.
Like, to be fair, I will be on Pokemon Go on those queues. I'm just, yeah, I mean, I'll be
that,
right there.
That to me is probably a better use of their time, because that's already an established game. And if Nintendo was smart about it, they put like a gym or a Pokestop right in the middle of it. Oh, have a good time.
They probably would, to be honest. All the memories, Pokemon Go, come from 5 years of it there now. Next question from Travis Nichols. Top of the morning to you. How do you gentlemen feel about game trailers showing too much? Of course, it's your own choice to watch, but where does the line get drawn between hyping up a release and giving away too much plot or character reveals? Isn't surprise the point of it all?
You are completely correct. We operate What Culture, Scott and I personally, on a cycle of picking apart every single piece of information that's fed our way. So we can tell you, hand on heart, that it is draining, exciting, and demoralizing most of the time to work on these things and ruin the entire film or a piece of TV or video game for yourself just by overanalyzing.
See, I think I'm not necessarily like fundamentally down on it. It depends what it is. Sometimes you'll realize that you have spotted the movies or the game's entire plot in that trailer, but that's also on them to not give those things away. Like you can spot Lady Dimitrescu in the back. Apparently her name's Lady Dimitrescu, by the way, not Lady Dimitrescu in Resident Evil 8.
Okay, fair enough.
PSA. They called her Lady Dimitrescu last night. And you can spot her in the background in one of the other shots, which sort of implies that she's in league with someone else in the new trailer, whatever. But that would be something that I wouldn't have noticed unless Ben Roy was combing every frame of it. So I think it can sometimes get in the way, but I don't know. For me, there's an art to a good trailer. There's an art to the misdirection. It's just that it has to pay off later. And it depends how it's done.
What I find kind of more infuriating is that if you're playing with a video game, you obviously have so much control over what you show, as in you are literally creating the screens, the scenes from the ground up. So you can choose to mask stuff off better, which makes me always think that the teasers and the leaks that they include in these trailers, they already have spotted them and they're just going like, go on then. This will get the hype going.
It's a weird like unsaid sort of bond between like the fans and what they're going to put out as the trailers, and then how they play with that expectation and how they factor all that stuff in. Obviously No Man's Sky is a bad way to do it, but in another way I quite like the way Death Stranding did it, where we actually got a surprise because we didn't know what was coming until we actually played it on launch day. Next question from Sean O'Byrne, who says UBP. What is your favorite video game character entrance? Mine is Cloud riding the train in Final Fantasy 7. Now I don't think I can beat that. in the original Final Fantasy VII. Young child me thought that was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. When the whole team, Barrett and Tifa and everybody, doubts that Cloud's still alive.
Yeah.
And then the train door opens and Cloud swings in and he had my name because I called him Scott.
Yeah,
and
they were
like, oh, Scott, you're still alive. And I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever done.
And with that music as well, when that kicks in, you're just kind of like, yes, mate.
That whole opening to Final Fantasy VII is still in the original one, is still so stupidly good.
You've got to give them credit where credit's due. Final Fantasy as a series introduces its characters in the best possible way. Like, if I was to go, burn them, burn them.
I just thought that. I'm just playing through Final Fantasy X on the Vita now. You got it.
Right,
you know what any of those lyrics are?
No, I know some of them. It goes...
we are talking about Final Fantasy X, by the way.
What does it go? It goes, don't you give up on it. You bite the hand that feeds you. I think that's it. That's the only bit that I know.
It's great. That's me and you, man. When you said that, because you did that music, and I was thinking of Auron when he turns up at the beginning of 10, when you see what do you call it? Zanarkand being attacked. Sin's coming, and there's all the water and everything, and Aaron is just standing there watching it come in. And I was like, oh, that guy's the coolest thing ever. And then,
it's because he turns to the camera. He looks over his shoulder, kind of at you. And he's like, this is about to be a good game here, boys. And then he like walks along and then the rocks behind him get lifted up and you see it all like going over his head and people running away. And he's just cool as a cucumber.
And it's that bit when Tidus, depending on where you're from, does that big old backflip kick as the music crescendos,
the
guitar
the
solo.
Going like, brruh, brruh, brruh,
brruh.
It's a great opening cinematic, that.
Yeah, a better video game character intro than that.
The only one you're going to find that comes close is... it's not a good one. It's bloody Zell from Final Fantasy VIII. God damn
it,
I hate
Zell. Oh, he backflips in during the start of VIII.
With a passion, mate. Everything about him annoys me.
He's got the Mike
me.
Tyson tattoo.
The Mike Tyson tattoo that was literally applied by his mam that morning, it seemed, because it's so dark and completely uniform that it looks like fake. When he does that little smile, but I mean, like, does the little pose, he's like,
where's all this hate for Zell coming from? He's a little fighting man.
He's a little fighting man. But he's so annoying. He's got, he's just a very, very aggressively energetic character,
right?
And I hate his special move or one of his limit breaks that he has where he runs around the entire world to punch somebody, right?
like
a goddamn idiot.
Yep.
He puts his feet down on the floor to skid to a halt before he punches them. So I'm like, you've lost the momentum you just built up.
I love young you being like, well, this doesn't make any sense at all.
Quetzalcoatl is like coming down. He's like a giant bird without a face.
I mean, that makes sense. That's all fine. I think if we're throwing, I'm just thinking of like the most cinematic games that make a point of introducing a character with a certain level of like memorability or panache or whatever. So I go to Metal Gear Solid and then my mind went to Vamp in Metal Gear Solid 2. Grey Fox in Metal Gear Solid 1, where you have that corridor full of bodies and then you realize that it's Grey Fox afterwards.
If you're talking about character intros, badass ones like that, when Metal Gear Solid 4, Guns
of the Patriots.
Yeah, Guns of the Patriots, when Raiden comes back.
Oh, when you get
unmasks and he's like, and you're like, oh man, Bryden's had a bit of work done to him, hasn't he?
He's had a bit of work done.
And
a bit of scaffolding
holds the sword with his foot. He's
that
like,
whole bit where, because when we were younger, but so much of this is just back when we were young. But when Metal Gear Solid 4 came out and it was like old Snake looking like he's 70 years old fighting those weird cow mechs, which I realize how insane Metal Gear Solid sounds to people who didn't keep up with it at the time. But in Metal Gear Solid 4, there are some giant mechs that sound like cows and they walk on like organic legs, but they have metal tops. It's
weird.
A thing.
Very
and then
weird.
Snake is suddenly 70 years old because he's like a clone and he's aging faster. It's a whole thing. And then Raiden comes...
Even if you sat through and played the game, it makes about as much sense.
This is a franchise with a character called Hot Coldman, so don't worry about it. But when Raiden comes in and he just cuts all their legs out and he's infinitely better than Snake in that scene, young me was like, this is the coolest thing ever. I was always on the Raiden Defense Force during the 2000s anyway.
Oh, yeah.
What a time. I think anything from Final Fantasy, anything from Metal Gear, we're pretty much good with.
I'm trying to think of what else you've had. Would I pick anything from... I mean, wrestling games are obviously out because obviously their entrances are pretty like spectacular.
Although when they started actually getting the budget and they did like, because I remember when wrestling games were just the Titantron video behind the guy
and they no walk arena, out,
like, just walking on the spot. Yeah. And then eventually, was it SmackDown Just Bring It?
Yeah, that was when they first put in the
God, we're old, Jules Gill, but that was a big old time.
I mean, you mentioned Ape Escape, Spectre from Ape Escape, when Spectre he like puts so the cool. little helmet on his head and he becomes all evil. I'm just like, oh, he's a bad and he's a wrong'un.
Oh my God. Anything from that era is pretty good. Okay, we'll end on a crossover question. Movie/games from Jody saying the Borderlands movie has cast Kevin Hart as Roland. Just can't see it working. Can anyone else see it? I don't have the reference point for this, but you know Roland, you know Borderlands things.
Yeah.
You see Kevin Hart working for this.
I think that he's a great comic actor, but Roland, as we know him, at least in the majority of the Borderlands appearances, is very kind of stoic when compared to the rest of the clan.
I thought that when I was looking at artwork like, for him, yeah.
The very first instance that you have where it runs through the different characters, like they don't speak, but what they do is they have their best traits shown instantly. So you get like Mordecai, he does like the knife flippy stuff and like this little Deadshot thing. Brick obviously smashes his hands together to show that he's strong. Mm. And then Lilith obviously does her like phase walking thing here and blows a kiss. But then Roland comes along and he's actually just sat there completely like stoic and then just pushes the camera away. Like he wants nothing to do with it. His whole gimmick here is like, I'm a soldier and I've got a past sort of thing.
Right. Yeah. Like don't shine the camera on me. Don't put the spotlight on me.
But can Kevin Hart do a restrained thing? I think they're going to rewrite the entire character to be much more jovial and in keeping with what Borderlands 3 is versus what Borderlands 1 is. Because when you remember that Borderlands was what, like maybe 70-75% the way through development before they completely shifted the graphical engine.
Yeah.
And that in turn changed the way that the game felt and played, and the tone of comedy was like spliced into it a lot more from that point. Mm-hmm. I think that Roland was probably just like the first character that they designed.
Right.
And he carries over hallmarks of being much more reserved compared to what, I mean, you look at where we are now. Like, he would stick out like a sore thumb for being the only normal person.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Borderlands 3 is like wacky central. It's Pickle Rick central. So I think, speaking of Pickle Rick, have you seen, was it you that sent me the link?
Yeah, I sent it to you earlier on.
Just, what's that? What's
Rainbow
that
Six meets Rick and Morty.
I mean,
that surely has to be one of the weirdest crossovers. Like, those are two things that I could not have.
You can't even play as like a tiny Pickle Rick. You've got to play as like the weird rat version.
Yeah, I was a bit disappointed that they haven't even got like a Pickle Rick bomb or something like that. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Like if you're going to lean into the gimmick, how it's so that he like throws it and it just goes like, Pickle Rick.
Or get just, maybe they have got Justin Roiland to do more voice stuff. But yeah, weird thing. As a sum up to that question, are you generally excited for the Borderlands movie?
Yes, like, 100%. Yeah. I am as excited for that film as you are for the Mortal Kombat film, because I really like the Borderlands franchise as a whole and I hope that they can do wonders with it.
I would hope so. The Dynasty Warriors movie looks like one of the only... They're nailing that. That thing looks insane.
It looks so cheesy. It looks so good, though. I'm really for it.
Yeah.
And I genuinely think that the people that are in charge of this know what they're doing.
Totally.
Like, even if they just had an hour and a half of just frantic battles of just smashing guys, like that's exactly what the game is, so I wouldn't care at all. I'd be like, yeah, this is brilliant.
I know we haven't had a proper trailer yet. I don't think it's been lots of behind the scenes stuff, but I hope there has to be a scene in there somewhere where someone just swipes at like 300 people at once. Assumedly
it'll be Lubu. It'll be 100% it'll be Lubu. Everyone will just be like, what? I'm putting my bets on this now. Okay. And you guys can quote me on this in like a month or two's time when we see a bit more of it. There's going to be a shot panning across some of the heroes of the kingdom. So you'll probably have Liu Bei, Guan Yu, and Zhang Fei, because they're like the main central three characters. And they'll all look aghast. They're going to be looking at something and shocked, right? And you're going to hear like a sound of thunder, but you realize that it ain't raining whatsoever. That's the sound of the sonic boom of Loon Boo. And then the camera's going to pan all the way down the battlefield, past people getting killed. And then all of a sudden, Loon Boo will step forward and just swipe away about 400 people. And they're going to go, it's Loon Boo.
And that will happen. That's will happen. Dude. The way that I'm visualizing it is like the way Sauron wipes away all the troops at the start of Fellowship of the Ring. I need that kind of energy. I think we're at a good time with video game movies now. Like Sonic was a nice bridging point, and then Detective Pikachu was pretty spot on. Hopefully Mortal Kombat seems okay. We'll know this time next week.
That's mad. That is absolutely mad that you will be sitting here either absolutely elated or so dejected that you won't want to record this.
We'll see how that pans out. I'm going to see if I can watch it at midnight, the Thursday night or whatever. Nice. Next week. For now, though, this has been the Untitled Banter podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much, mate.
Thank you all very much for sending in your questions, and we'll catch you next week.
UBP. 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 Etc.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.